Hello, I'm John Wilson. Thank you for downloading this edition of Master Tapes from BBC Radio 4. Hello and welcome to Master Tapes. That's Edwin Collins and his band performing A Girl Like You for our audience here at the BBC Maida Vale Studios. In the first part of this programme, we heard an extraordinary story of creativity, survival, resilience and recovery. Edwin and his wife, Grace Maxwell, discussed their joint fight to get Edwin fit again after two devastating strokes. And they talked us through the making of the album, Gorgeous George, which spawned not only his biggest hit, A Girl Like You, but also tracks such as The Campaign for Real Rock, If You Could Love Me and Make Me Feel Again. The way you turned
your head. 6 months in hospital, I couldn't say a word. Yeah. Yes and no, and the possibilities are endless. To make me feel again. If you could love me. Sometimes, yeah. I don't recognise my own words.
The side of him that drops you in it wherever you go, that's back for sure. Yeah. But
if you missed the first part of this programme, it's there on the Master Tapes page on the BBC website. But now it's the turn of the studio audience to ask the questions, not just about Gorgeous George, but also about Edwin's work as a producer and his ongoing recovery. And we'll have more live music from Edwin and his band. But before that, I usually ask my guests at this point about their relationship with their fans. And yours have, of course, been particularly important because they were very supportive after the stroke. You got a lot of feedback and support, particularly online.
Thousands of letters.
Yeah, we had so many well-wishers and letters and emails, and Edwin's creaky old website that he used to have had this mad old forum on it, and lots of people used to contact us via that, and I found it very sustaining. I really did. You sort of woke up in the grip of social media, you know, and social networks.
No, just
and
when that was taking off.
Exactly. Right. And for him, that's been a godsend to, in terms of helping him recover. Reading and also the ability to generate independent writing. And he's an avid Twitterer. He's a bit of a mad Twitterer. Quite wacky.
Right, yeah.
No. What do you mean, Grace? Yeah.
But he has
Pardon me.
But the fans have been so important to you. So I guess all the people in this room here this afternoon, Edwin, are very important to you.
Yeah, yeah. Tell me about it. Thank you, fans.
Well, one of those long-time fans is here with our first question, and this one comes from Mark Lawrence.
Your solo career began in such an exciting way in 1986 or thereabouts, with all those terrific songs that ended up on Hope and Despair and some brilliant gigs that I remember, like the Town and Country Club and so on.
Yeah.
And then after Hellbent on Compromise LP in about 1990, things seemed to fizzle out, I suppose. So my question is, what were you doing in the intervening years? And secondly, how did you consciously change your approach and sound to record in such a way that you could get back on top again?
What it is, I need to own place. And I did that in George's George, the album.
But do you remember the sort of chronology of that, really? Even by the time that you were making Hellbent on Compromise, I remember Will had just been born then, he was a baby. And it was incredibly difficult for Edwin to persuade somebody to allow him to make a record, and that's what he had to do.
I need my own place.
It was just a nightmare.
You're in recording studio.
Yeah.
Edwin decided that the only way to deal with this situation was to seize the means of production, literally. And he got this book called Sound Recording Practice, and he used to read this in his bed every night. It was like a physics book. And the studio was a means to that particular end, but it was a wonderful thing. It became Edwin's all pervading passion.
Yeah.
Well, before this descends into an edition of Audiophile today, we'll move on. Next question. This one's from Christine Thomason, and she has a question for Grace.
I just wondered if you got any better at strumming the guitar, Grace.
Oh.
Ah, now we should just explain this. After Edwin came out of hospital and picked up the guitar again for the first time, Edwin, you couldn't play and still can't play with your right arm, your strumming arm. And you provided the strumming arm, Grace. Yeah. In fact, let's pass the guitar over.
I can still
over.
Do it, but I haven't got any better, put it that way. I've got rather stuck in the same vein.
I'm searching for the truth. I'm searching for the truth. Some sweet day we'll get there in the end. Some sweet day we'll get there in the end.
It's those three over there. The muses were trying to put me off.
Yeah.
I think it was the wrong kind of pick, wasn't it?
Yeah, the wrong kind of pick.
It's astonishing to me because I know that Edwin's guitar playing friends are amazed at how much equanimity he accepts not playing the guitar with. But I think you focus on all the things you have gotten back and count your blessings, don't you?
Yeah, the fact that you can't play guitar. And I mean, really, for somebody who has been playing the guitar since you were, 15, 16 years old, who was a great guitar player, who had a very distinctive style.
Yeah.
I mean, do you not have a sense of loss that you can't pick up the guitar and do it anymore?
I'm singing, but at least that's the main thing. I am a songwriter, and that's great. I wish I can play the solo again once more, but so what? I would still strum.
Yeah, and you talk about...
James and Carwin.
Often someone will have a guitar sitting opposite him, and so we'll form the shape and then... He'll move his fingers and we'll try and keep in time with him moving the fingers, or we'll strum the guitar if there isn't another one. Are you recording that?
And so on. I make up a new song.
Is that a new song?
Yes.
Yeah.
No problem.
Often it'll start off as well with Edwin's dictaphone. That's become really important.
Yeah.
Because Edwin gets musical, abstract musical ideas.
Yeah.
Grace says that like 2 or 3 in the morning, Edwin will sit up, you know, bolt upright and...
So you have a dictaphone by the bed there, Edwin, and in the middle of the night, the inspiration strikes and you put it on and you just hum into
it. Harmonies.
And he assembles it like that, don't you?
So that's a new technique because you've brought with you today, and it's sitting here on the desk in front of us, a notebook from about 93, 94. And within that book you were showing me before we started recording this afternoon, these are the sketches for the songs that ended up on Gorgeous George, and there are alternate titles, there are lyrics that never made it to the record, there are also overarching themes of the sort of things you want to express.
Sketches.
And you see his lyrics all over. He's a shocking speller. It's always been...
Cheers for that, Grace. Even before my stroke.
Mm-hmm. You were a really bad speller.
It's like a really bizarre version of Mr. and Mrs. this program, isn't it? Next question is from Rebecca Rubio, who's a company director from Portsmouth and who first saw Edwin when she was 14.
Rebecca. There's a lot of anger in Gorgeous George.
Yeah.
Do the same things still get you angry these days?
No, there is a lot of anger, especially Campaign for Real Rock.
Which is the first track on the album.
Yeah, yeah. But I was railing at the world. I was furious at people. And nowadays, I'm past it. I don't care anymore.
What were you furious at? Whether the other people were more successful than you at the time?
It's sad. Isn't it?
We should just say at this point, because I'm just going to lean behind me here and pull out This, I'm showing to the audience here at Maida Vale, one of those billboards that used to be, well, they still have them in London Underground trains,
yeah, yeah.
And they are poems. Poem for the Underground. And and it's usually Keats or Byron or Shelley or somebody. Or,
yeah, famous.
And this says Edwin Collins, the campaign for real rock. And the lyrics are then written out, and it has the official London Underground logo there. Now, Grace.
Yeah.
This is not an official poem for the Underground, is
no,
it?
No. It's, tell it's, me about it.
It's a, I believe nowadays they call it a guerrilla marketing tactic. Edwin came home with one of the tube ads so that we could get the dimensions and said, I've got an idea, I'm going to be an unofficial poems on the Underground thing. So you say, I'm doing the Jubilee line and you do the Northern line.
And you would remove the official poem and replace it with...
Not the poems, just any old advert.
Any old advert.
Yeah. Right. Just take them out and slide these in and try and look as if I was an official employee of London Underground.
So people would be heading to work, would yeah. look up, see the poem for the day and would yeah. read the gathering of the yeah. tribes descending, vultures from the caustic sky, the rotting carcass of July, an ugly sun hung out to dry.
Good looks.
Your gorgeous hippie dream are dying, etc.
etc.
And great lyrics.
Yeah. And I would see them obviously as I was replacing my thing with the.
What's going on? I'm mad. Angry. Ranting at the world. Yeah. Frustration and yeah. anger.
But it's spilled
out.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. And you can see that. Your frazzled brains are putrefying, repackaged, sold and sanitised. The devil's music exercised. You live, you die, you live, you die. I mean, it goes on like this. Yeah. But you stand by that song, though, Edward. I mean, it's written in a state of mind, in a time and place, and you were angry, and you're not anymore, and you are, by your own admission, a far more mellow and accepting character than yeah. you might have been. But you stand by these lyrics.
You stand by the lyrics, don't
you? Yeah, yeah.
Next question is from Mark Cotton, who describes himself as a freelance audio wrangler from Northampton. And he says, you, Edwin, are an inspiration to him and a prime example of a human spirit. Mark.
When you made Gorgeous George, you were working as producer for other artists.
Yeah.
But this was the first record that you totally produced yourself.
Yeah.
Was it just a case that you realised, I could do this myself, actually. I don't need someone else to help me create what I can hear in my own head.
I articulate my songs, along with Seb and my engineer. My own vision, my own truth.
He's just becoming more and more megalomaniacal, as he went along.
What about you? I repeat.
Do you ever allow Grace a say in the musical studio, Edwin, or is she banned from that environment? Because clearly she has very strong views about things.
She's coming along, but for the ride.
Yeah.
No, I've got my own departments. I've got plenty to do.
You've got more important things to deal
with. Yeah, and Edwin's, that says, no, I would never interfere with that stuff at all.
Next question. This is from Adrian Francis, who's a teacher from Nantwich in Cheshire. Adrian.
On some of your early solo gigs in the mid-1980s, I recall you exuberantly proclaiming, rock and roll is catharsis. Which of your songs is the most cathartic when you perform it now?
A girl like you, I always like that song. And forsooth, the new song and Dilemma and...
Well, I know what one of your slower songs you really love playing. It's Home Again, isn't
it? Yeah. I suppose so, yeah.
Because it had such resonance, and it's a song which was recorded before the stroke. It became the title track of the album, which came out just after the stroke.
But I have some kind of sense of foreboding.
But when you wrote that song, I think you were a worried man. It was kind of like writing your own, I don't know.
Yeah.
Really? Do you sense that, Grace?
Yeah, I absolutely feel that way. There's the way he was thinking. It was like it summarises life or something to tie it all up. And, of course, now it takes a different slant.
It's a song which actually refers to...
It soars away and repairs you, yeah.
It's brilliant. A song that refers to childhood and hearing the guitars ringing and looks back right across your life and takes you to a place where you were back home again, but really for the wrong reasons. Yeah. Maybe can we hear a bit of that song?
Okay.
Maybe we'll put you on the spot with just a blast of Home Again.
One, two, three, four. I'm home again, hardly certain of my role, and then I keep searching for my soul again. There was nothing I could find. Unwhole again, but I've been here before, old friends, and I know our case consoled again. In the past I've left behind, outside on the street, well, I heard somebody singing, and I heard the music ringing from some clapped-in parrot station. It was my unholy salvation. Home again. Home again.
We need another break after that just to recompose ourselves. We had that question about rock and roll being catharsis, and music is a catharsis for you, isn't it?
Yeah,
you can hear it there.
It's cathartic in a way, especially after my stroke. It's the world to me.
And Grace has written about this in her book Falling and Laughing, which documented the struggle after the stroke and the rehabilitation and the recovery. But she said that for a long time you couldn't listen to music. It was too difficult to reconnect not only to your own music but to some of the music that you love. And
especially
then
in hospital, I cried constantly.
When you first decided you were ready to listen to some music that you liked.
I remember Johnny Allen, Promised Land, Chuck Berry wrote it, and I cried constantly
when you heard it. So, and you put together a compilation CD, Grace.
It was one that Edwin had actually put together for a car journey, you know, some time before that, and I found it. So it had some of his favourites on it, and the first track was Johnny Allen's Promised Land, and I put it on his headphones, you know, in his bed, and didn't know how he was going to react. And as soon as he heard the first notes of it, he dissolved, you know, completely. So,
do you remember that, Edwin?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do.
But that was very encouraging to me, because I thought, well, this
really?
I'm
so great.
Okay, so I thought, well, that's what the reaction I would like to see. This means that it's still, it's full of meaning for you. It still is this power on you.
Well, let's get to another question, which is actually on a related theme. It's a question from Johnny Aldred.
Yeah, back in the 1980s, you very much inspired me to sing. And I wonder, what does singing give you and what can it give to other people?
I enjoy singing a lot. And aspiring, I'm not into that concept.
Inspiring?
No,
you do your job and I do mine.
Yeah.
But so you inspired Johnny to sing, but that wasn't the intention at all.
No,
that's what
enjoy singing.
It's a happy byproduct.
Yeah.
It's much too selfish to be thinking about other people.
Let's move on again. Next question's from Dawn Foster. Dawn says she's a teacher working in North London who's been a fan of Edwin since seeing Orange Juice at Rock City in Nottingham on the Rip It Up tour. Everybody's come here with their credentials today, haven't they?
Your son Will and his band, they do a cover of I've Got It Bad.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that when you hear it?
Wonderful.
Will was very young when you were recording the Gorgeous George album and you took him out on tour. So now, how old is he now then?
23. Oh, my God.
Give us a blast of I've Got It Bad. Have you got that one worked out? You can't do that one. Look at this, is how good they are. Carwin is showing James the chords, and they're straight off.
And I can still see you. I can stay you. Yes, I can still see you. I can still see you.
Just a taster, just a little wee taster of I've Got It Bad. So Will, your son, now covers that. And is he all right?
We did a tour this year.
Have you encouraged him, Edwin? I mean, did you say to... No. Or did you say, you do your job, I'll do mine?
No. When he was 10, not for me, he said the guitar and the bass. But now he's enjoying it.
Has he taken over the strumming role as well?
No, they're in the same mould. They're both of them pretty selfish people. They're not much for...
Cheers for that, yet again.
Next question is from Gavin Buchan, who is a truck driver for a well-known wine company. And he says he loves going to gigs, listening to music. Gavin.
Who were your main influences when you first started writing music? And who influences you nowadays?
Velvet Underground. I was into Chic, the Buzzcocks, Frank Goddard, the Subway Sect.
Yeah, but not contemporary music, not stuff that's being made at the moment, then.
I'm too old for that, carry on. No, I am.
Stick with the classics, yeah. Time for one more question. This one's from Ian Fenton, who says he's a headhunter by profession. And he first saw Edwin with Orange Juice in Edinburgh around 1978 after the band had spent a day at Edinburgh Zoo. Also, they said, how do you know they just spent the day at Edinburgh Zoo, Ian?
I think James did a soliloquy about it, did you not?
Okay.
Is Ian. That right?
Yes, exactly. That's what happened. Orange Juice was supporting an Edinburgh band called The Scars that night. And he talked about how he'd spent the afternoon at the zoo and particularly were enamoured with the monkeys, apparently. My question is... what's your opinion of the Gorgeous George, the album, now after nearly 20 years? And would you change anything on it with the benefit of hindsight?
No. Gorgeous George, leave it alone. But it's a good record. It's a strong record, but...
But you wouldn't change anything about it now? But
no.
And do you remember when you'd recorded it, when you played it back? Did you think, this is it, it's a complete record. I'm really, really happy with it.
No, I must admit, it was a good record, but I'm thinking about the songs, 94, I'm thinking about the attitude and I'm thinking about the meaning, especially Campaign for
Real Rock.
Yeah. I was in... angry, ranting about the world and...
But you were too close to it at that time and you're too wrapped up in it to sit back and go, well, I think it's perfect, but...
I mean, do you regard Gorgeous George as your best record?
I don't know. It's not up to me to judge these things. It's the audience, the viewing public.
Edwin, thanks very much indeed. That's all we've time for in this edition of Master Tapes. Thanks to our audience here at the BBC Studios in Maida Vale. Thanks for all of your questions to the band, Carwin Ellis, to James Warburn and Sean Reed, and most of all to Grace Maxwell and to Edwin Collins. Don't forget the Master Tapes page is on the Radio 4 website. You can download today's programme as well as the rest of the series, and there's also exclusive content there, including full versions of songs played live here at Maida Vale and videos of all of our Master Tapes guests, and you can tweet us using the hashtag #MasterTapes. But we leave you now with Edwin Collins and the band playing us out with Make Me Feel Again. Thank you. Remember, you can find the full version of this and other songs recorded during our live sessions on the Master Tapes pages at the Radio 4 website, along with photographs, videos and the other editions of the series.
5:25 on a Monday morning, I'm lying on my unmade bed. Outside these walls there's a new day dawning, the sky turns from black to red. I can't sink a wink. I'm at losing control. I'm doubled up in agony.
The goal was to make a pure Johnny Cash record.
BBC Radio 4 is thumbing through the back catalogue.
You could play a guitar solo of 10 minutes because people were actually listening.
Re-releasing the best music documentaries from the archive.
I could get in a band and nobody would dare mention, like, oh, she's okay for a girl. You just wouldn't say that in the punk thing.
It's like throwing down the glove and saying, if you really want me to sing to you, you're really going to have to shut up and listen.
Radio 4 on Music, the new weekly download.
You have to fight and you have to keep fighting and never stop.
Available now on the BBC Radio 4 website.
Horse